Lennon. A great ball opportunity here. It's in. It's Patrick McElhinney.
Humphrey Lindroyd.
Here's Hooven. And Hooven gets it.
I'm delighted to be back, yes.
This is tough.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is. You're very welcome along to the latest edition of the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. A pretty big cast in studio today, including Shane Keegan, Alan Cawley, James O'Toole and Conor Neville. Welcome aboard, Shane. This is your first trip into the RTÉ Soccer Podcast. Good to have you along.
Cheers, Adrian. Happy to be in.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. Yeah. I'll tell you in another while.
Yeah. Alan and James, of course, veterans of the scene. And James, you bought more goodies today.
I did, yeah. I'm just happy to see he's actually in studio this week. Makes a change from just being normally about me left in the studio by myself.
Yeah. Anna, can you describe the sweeties that he's brought?
Yeah, there's a nice little selection there.
Maltese looks like one looks to pick the bunch. To
bit
me
of a mint chocolate one as well, is that? Yes.
Fair play.
Vanilla.
Did you buy them or did you make them?
Of course I bought them. Anybody knows me knows I can't be doing that stuff.
The James O'Toole Bake Off. Yeah, they look great. They look a bit fattening.
My name is all over that middle one. Yeah, okay. Pure chocolate one. Yeah.
Well, you can get to it in about 40-45 minutes time. Listen, we'll do our hits and misses as per usual. I'm going to set the ball rolling with the hit of the week, and I think it'll be commonly shared right around the studio. My hit of the week goes to Aaron Connolly. Surprise, surprise. 2-goal salvo for Brighton, his first Premier League start, and then called up to the senior international side. So he leaves the under-21s. And Shane Keegan, you were talking to him less than 24 hours before it all unfolded so dramatically for him.
Yeah, fantastic timing. Pure luck, really. I thought he'd been doing quite well. I thought the debut might be coming. And I said, right, I'll try and get a few words with this lad before the whole world is looking to talk to him. When I was managing Galway United, I was living over in Aranmore, and that's where he's from himself and the family are from Aranmore. He actually, I used to do quite a lot of kind of my prep work, watching videos of opposition and all that in the Aranmore, in the Maldron Hotel in Aranmore. And during his off-season last summer, I have to say, every day he'd pass by heading into the gym, you know, really, really focused sort of a fella. So, yeah, chanced my arm with through the family to see would he have a chat. And spoke for about half an hour on Friday evening. And obviously, I must be having some fantastic words of wisdom.
And, of course, it's been published on RT Sport.
Who are you ringing this week?
Yeah. Who do you want, lads?
Yeah. The article, and it's very good. It's up on RT Sport online. You can check it out there. But, Alan, what a dream weekend for him. And now he's with the senior squad.
Yeah, it was unbelievable, really, Adrian. I was tuned into the match myself. And obviously, you get wind that he's starting. So, of course, you're all eyes focusing on the lad as well. And as Shane said, I felt that had been coming because obviously he was beginning to make an impact coming off the bench in the previous four games, and I think the manager did like him. He had him involved since pre-season as well, so it was probably only a matter of time before he did get the start. And what a game to be thrown into as well. And obviously Spurs having their troubles at the moment, but he tormented them from start to finish. And Shane spoke there about the timing of getting the phone call. The timing for him obviously coming up with the Irish thing, timing is everything really in the game, Adrian. And I felt last week, I felt Mick should have named him in the squad anyway, regardless of the game on Saturday. But once he put in the performance that he did, everybody was crying out for the fact that he had to be in the squad. So I think Mick had no choice. And I think it's the right decision. But as I say, based on the performance with the under-21s and the fact that he's been involved with the first team, I think Mick should have named him in the squad, probably ahead of Curtis anyway, or maybe Scott Hogan. But the fact that he's in there now was good. And I think he might have a part to play in the games coming up, because What a player to be coming off the bench. And the fact that he's so pacey and so direct, that's what I love about him. Shane mentions, like, you look at him after the match with his top off, his physique, he's so strong. And yeah, he's that low centre of gravity.
He looks the player, doesn't he?
Yeah, and the goal that he got as well, obviously, the night up in Tala against Armenia, there was loads of that kind of cutting in and that little shimmy and getting the shot off. He looks to have a serious future ahead of him, and it's great for us, Adrian, yeah.
Yeah, I think most people in Irish football circles as well would know this is very much not a flash in the pan. I mean, his name has been quite a big name for a while. And as Al says about timing, the thing with the timing is I think we would have known about him an awful lot earlier, only he suffered an extremely unfortunate injury when he went out on a loan move to Luton. Because at the time, talking to a couple of people, I think there was an absolutely ridiculous amount of League 1, League 2 sides trying to get him on loan at the time that Luton got him in. I think had he not picked up that injury, you know, he probably would have banged in a load of goals back then. We'd all have been aware of him back then. So he's probably taken a little bit longer to emerge because of that. But yeah, it's hard to see.
Looking at him, Shane, at the weekend, And obviously with the 21s, he played on that kind of left side of a tree, cutting in. He likes that. But he was very much central with Brighton the other day. Do you think going forward his best position will be through the middle, or that kind of left-hand side area?
Yeah, I do. And I think, more importantly, I think he definitely does.
He fancies himself as a centre-forward.
I don't think he's been too shy in saying that his nose is almost a little bit out of joint when he's asked to play out in wide areas. He'll do it. He'll go and, you know, he'll do whatever's asked, but he absolutely sees himself as a centre-forward. He said that his football and idol is Sergio Aguero. That's who he tries to model all his play on. If he had his choice, no matter, it'd be through the middle, he'd be looking
for that kind of build he has as well, yeah, isn't he? Like Aguero,
yeah.
Alan mentioned a few moments ago, Conor, that he wouldn't be surprised if he got a run out against possibly Georgia. Who knows about Switzerland? What do you reckon?
Mick was saying today that he definitely is ready. You know, he was asked whether he thought he was ready, and he said he was. I wasn't that surprised when he wasn't picked initially, and even after the two goals, we were speculating whether he would be picked, because we've got so used to Irish managers like O'Neill and Trapattoni being quite stubborn, and almost because the media are clamouring for someone so much, they seem to resent that and go the other way. But fortunately, Mick has decided to move quickly, as he did with Robbie Keane back in the day, and he's thrown him in now. And I'd be surprised if he doesn't make some impact against Georgia. I'm not sure he'll start, but I think depending on how the game is going, I could see him getting on at some stage.
James, Mick is still by his nature somewhat conservative, so it's hard to see him starting.
Yeah. I can't see him starting. I honestly, if I put my hand on my heart, I can't see him playing.
Yeah. I'm a bit like that.
I think he'll bring him into the squad. It'll be nice to have him around the squad. Mick is very, very loyal to the people who get him to where he is. I don't know. I think it's been a great week for him. I think it's a fantastic week for him. I think the buzz around him, I think Shane's obviously tipped him off to tell him what to do on the day before. Obviously, there's no question. But will Mick put him on? I honestly don't. I think it's two big games for Mick.
Unless Mick has genuine intentions of using him, is it not a mental move to pull him out of the Italy game, which is such an important...
But he's done that before. I think, going back
to what Conor said, I don't think Mick had a choice once he got the two goals. Yeah. Like the place went bananas on Saturday. And as I said, I would have put him in last week anyway based on the performances with the 21s. But also, even more so than Parrott and all, he looked more ready. Parrott's still young, in fairness. And I would disagree with James. I think he has a great chance of coming on definitely 15, 20 minutes to go.
Depends on the scoreline.
Absolutely. I mean,
unless we're chasing, we won't see him. But if we are chasing...
Yeah, and the likelihood is with these two games, I think we could be chasing.
Okay. If we are chasing...
And you look at the options that are around, like up front... He's probably the best that there is now.
Especially with David McGoldrick struggling. Yeah. Well, let's get another perspective on this. We're joined on the line by former Irish international Keith Tracy. Keith, you've been listening in. What do you reckon on Aaron Connolly and Mick? Will he play him for a bit of the game in Tbilisi on Saturday? Or I guess it depends on how the game is panning out, but what do you reckon? Would he start him?
I think under the circumstances, he would have started him, but with it being a way to Georgia, and there being so many makeshift players coming in for, you know, their fourth, second, third, fourth, whatever cap it is, you know, there's so many people just filling holes at the minute that it wouldn't be fair on him to put him in at the minute, because it's not a great Irish team, to be honest. So, you know, to throw another young lad in when people are playing out of position and going to be filling holes, I think, away to Georgia as well, that's going to be a bridge too far for even somebody as talented as him. But, you know, we're not going to have a lot of the ball, I don't think, on Saturday. So, you know, it's somebody like Conley who you want that to just spark a bit of magic out somewhere, leave somebody for dead, and, you know, break the midfield line and what through. But, you know, it's one of them. We're going to have to see how the game goes, see if Mick's going to play five in the middle or, you know, a 4-1, 4-1. It all depends on what Mick's thinking, but I don't know, I'd be very, very tempted to throw him in and put McLean even left back and put Conley left wing.
Well, funny, Mick McCarthy did talk about possibly James McLean playing at left back. No end to Stevens, of course. Shane, it's a huge game. Keith mentioned there that Ireland may not have a lot of the ball on Saturday in Tbilisi. Would you agree?
Yeah, well, I think it's something we're fairly used to at this stage. I don't think we have a whole lot of the ball in any of the games, really. I don't think Mick has a problem with that. He's happy enough to do that. The problem we have, I suppose, is up till now, we haven't been fantastic on the counter-attack. And as Keith has just said, like, Jesus, if you get Aaron on the left wing, you'd imagine he'd be the absolute ideal man to be breaking on a counter-attack.
Alan?
Yeah, I just feel like, I know, like, you're talking about a young lad and it's his debut and a big game, as you said, James, away from home, all those things. But I think the lad is ready, and sometimes you just can't hold anyone back. Sometimes you just have to let them off the leash, Adrian. And I'm not saying he'd start. I don't think he'd start by any stretch of the imagination. He definitely won't start, but I would absolutely think, coming off the bench, even 15, 20 minutes to go, even if we're drawing the game, he has the capability of coming on and just doing something. He looks like a lad who's full of confidence as well, that he'd relish the occasion. He doesn't look like the type of lad who would freeze on that kind of occasion. It's almost as if he's saying to himself, this is my stage and it's where I belong. That was the impression I got off him on Saturday, even watching the game. He's even kind of looking around to the others, almost as if, like, here I am, you give me the ball, to seasoned campaigners that are playing alongside him. So I don't think that would be in any ways faze him whatsoever. So I definitely think he will come on at some point. And I just feel Mick is in a position where there's only 3 games to go. And I know he's saying, look, I've only the 8 games and I have to kind of stick by the tried and trusted. But he might feel as though he needs him as well to get the result on Saturday.
And that's exactly the point I was going to make. If Mick puts himself in Potter's shoes, I mean, Potter hasn't decided on Saturday that, you know, there's only a game or two left in the Premier League season and we're safe, it's time to blood some young fellas. That was a huge game for Brighton. They'd been really, really struggling. The pressure, even though it's early in the season, was starting to come on them already. And with all that pressure to go and produce a result, he decides that this is the man to put his faith in, you know?
Keith, there's no doubting the magnitude of the game on Saturday. It's a big game for Ireland. And arguably, a draw wouldn't be necessarily a bad result, but it's a game Ireland really need to be winning, surely.
Yeah, well, it's Georgia and Switzerland next, and then obviously Denmark at home. But, you know, I think if we come out with the next 2 games with 4 points, that leaves us on 15. And if Denmark win their 2, they'll be on 15. So it all comes down to them coming to Dublin. And we all know what happened when they came to Dublin a couple of years ago and ripped us apart. So it's not great, really. It'd be great to take 2 wins, and then, you know, Denmark are really under pressure coming to Dublin. But I honestly, you know, to bring it into horse racing terms, we're around in the bend now, and it looks like I have a feeling this is where the wheels come off, to be just truthful about it. To be honest, I can't see us getting at them in Georgia, and I don't really see us getting at them in Switzerland either, to be honest.
Why do you say that?
Just the way we play. I think we're so reliant on our defenders, you know, Duffy, Keogh, Coleman. The spine of the team is gone. Duffy's gone. Well, Duffy may be back, but Keogh is gone. Enda Stevens is gone at left back. I just don't see, you know, the big strong presence. I don't see a leader. I think, you know, Wheelow's done very well over the years for Ireland, but, you know, to be still in that Irish midfield at that age, you know, there's going to be questions asked. But yeah, like I say, the spine is gone, and I think Georgia are a better team than people give them credit for, and it's such a hostile atmosphere over there. Like, I travelled over there with the Irish team, and I travelled to Tony once, and it was a dipping kettle of fish over there altogether.
Yeah, a very intimidating atmosphere. Would you be as downbeat, Alan?
I'd be along the same lines, to be honest.
Oh, come on, lads.
No, I think just because of, as Keith said, the injuries would concern me. Hopefully Duffy is back, but if you're missing 3 or back 4, your usual back four, that would have to concern any manager. I think Enda has been brilliant as well, so Enda's going to be a massive loss. And if you're talking about playing the likes of McLean, that wouldn't fill me with much confidence playing him left full. You would like to see a recognised left full back in that position. So that would be a worry. I think if we were to pick up a point maybe in Georgia, I think we'd struggle against Switzerland. I really do. And we've been lucky enough in them big games so far. Like, you go back to the late ones, and I watched the game Georgia-Denmark. Georgia were brilliant against Denmark there in their last game. So, 2 massive games that are so, so difficult. And we've put ourselves in such a brilliant position that you'd love to kind of think after these 2, we're still in with a good shout. And I think we may be, but I think these are really hard games, Adrian.
Yeah, and Denmark playing Switzerland on Saturday as well. Connor, give us some positive vibes.
Well, I have to now. I mean, I don't know. We're all on the brink of depression here.
Some chocolate here if you want.
Yeah, there's chocolate there. That was badly needed. I don't think Ireland will lose in Georgia.
But you don't think they'll win either. Isn't that the truth?
If we can inject some positivity in here, one of Ireland's best performances and one of their best for a while was at home to Georgia in March when the team played very well. Now, I know they're kind of depleted, particularly at the back, and there's obviously question marks over McGoldrick. At the same time, I couldn't see them losing there. I mean, I would be very pro throwing Connolly in and seeing what he could do potentially. I think more than likely it will be a draw over there. We could steal a win. We have in the past. I mean, the McGeady game famously when he scored 2 goals. Ireland could easily have, you know, drawn that game. They obviously dropped a couple of points in the last campaign. You know, more than likely it'll be a draw, but I don't think Ireland will lose. And also, the question of whether Denmark are in the mix, Denmark have already drawn out there, so we're not exactly giving points away to Denmark in that sense. And plus, Denmark have to play Switzerland this weekend, so that game will be interesting. It's unlikely that Denmark, I would suggest it's unlikely Denmark will win that game, given what happened earlier in the campaign where Switzerland were clearly better and threw it away against them. So,
yeah, Switzerland are 3 up in that game.
I mean, the way it'll shake down, Ireland will still be in the mix come the last game, I would say. Whatever happens. I mean, they may only take a point from the next week, they may get more, but they'll still be in the shake-up.
So glad you're here. Yeah. So glad you're here.
Look, I don't think that corrected vibes either. No, look, everything the lads are saying.
I did my best.
Everything the lads are saying is 100% true. But at the same time, if you are looking for the positives, I mean, the form of the Irish players this weekend was fantastic.
Yeah.
They really, I mean, aside from Aaron's two goals, you've got Jeff Hendrick with a goal, Conor Horan.
Which is your hit of the week.
Well, I suppose, it was like those Irish team Premier League reviews. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, you're used to kind of, oh, this guy came on here, but this weekend it was like a Cheltenham report. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
it was like being back in 1993 or 94 or something. It was Hendrick scoring,
Alan's beloved Scott Hogan scored.
That's true. off the bench to get a goal
and again,
as well.
Talking about timing, because Twitter was just awash with, oh, get Connolly in, how is he not in ahead of Hogan? And then Hogan pops up for the goal. So timing is everything.
Another thing, James McCarthy played full
James
match
McCarthy
started
played.
Against West Ham and played
I would have had
well.
McCarthy in the squad as well because he's been coming back and he's on the brink of getting in. That was his first start. I definitely would have had him in the squad, and I think he has a big part to play going forward. It might not be under Mick, maybe under Stephen Kenny, but I still think he has a huge part to play, James McCarthy.
I think the Horan one is huge, because if we were talking 7 days ago, we'd be worried about a fella heading in an important position for us who hadn't played a competitive game in a reasonable number of weeks, and he's gone from that to doing well, very well in
I was worried about him a few weeks ago, because it looked like there was obviously they've signed a lot of players, Aston Villa, and it looked like he was might have been surplus to the fact that they're in the Premier League now. We might need a better quality of player. But to be fair to him, he's knuckled down and he's responded to that as well. Got himself back in the team and he was brilliant on Saturday.
Keith, if the three lads are out at the back, what back line do you think he'll shuffle it around?
It depends whether he's going to go for a five or a four at the back. But I think he'd probably go Coleman right back, Egan long, and personally, I would go McLean with Conley on the left from the start. Because I just think we're going to be penned in. I think the Georgians are going to keep the ball well. And, you know, when we do get it, we're going to have to break our speed, because I don't think we have the talent to keep the ball for, you know, longer than...
Would you find a place for Matt Doherty under...
the atmosphere.
Would you find a place for Matt Doherty on the right wing, or would you be leaving him out again?
It's a difficult one. It probably would, actually, yeah. It would complement Conley nice on the left. So if we're getting forward, he could sort of, you know, hold back and Coleman could, you know, pull the strings from there. He's been around. Valdo's been around. I played with Longy at Burnley, you know, back in the day. So Longy's been, I know he hasn't got a lot of touch, but he's been around a long, long time. He knows what he's doing. He's not the most vocal of people, which would, you know, you need them type of people in these games when you're going away. And I just don't know. It doesn't fill me with confidence. I've wrote out what team I think, and it's just not filling me with confidence at all.
I think he'll play Matt Doherty left full, Adrian. Yeah, 100%. And I wouldn't, even in a million years, play James McLean left full. And that's no disrespect to him, but all his strengths are going forward. Defensively, I watched him against Preston, it was a few weeks ago. It was earlier on in the season now, a game live on Sky, and they had him back left full, and he was atrocious, he was. Defensively, he's all over the place, his positional play and all. He just doesn't understand the role, to be fair to him. Now, we'll give you everything, and as he always does, James. But I felt in the last game, he played quite well for us. One of his better games... the one where he came on, where he set up the goal for us. So I think Mick McCarthy likes him in the position that he's in as well, left midfield. Because if you go back to last Tuesday's press conference, he was sticking by McLean, saying there's no way I'd play Aaron Connolly ahead of McLean.
Yeah.
Now things have obviously changed in the last few days with Connolly, but I think he likes McLean in that left.
He's unlikely to want to create another headache in solving one headache.
Yeah,
if he drops McLean back in, well, now what's he going to do with left wing? Like, have you Connolly sketched in on left wing in your team, Keith, or who have you left wing if McLean goes left full?
Well, I would have put Connolly on the left and McLean left back behind them, but it doesn't fill me with confidence looking at it. That's only just to try and walk Connolly in and play Doherty on the right, but you know, the leash would be on him. He'd be told, listen, you don't go over the halfway line. When we get the ball, you leave Aaron Connolly, and you know, maybe Jeff or Connor can get forward and support whoever the target man will be up there. But look, thinking of it now, Shane Long would be absolutely perfect to spearhead our attack. A great little leap on him. He runs the channel so well. And I'm thinking, who are we going to put up there who's as mobile as him and can get round?
Aaron Connolly.
Callum Robinson, I think. He'll go Callum Robinson, I think, will he, if there's no McGoldrick?
As a target man, he's very well suited
to an out and out striker role, will he?
But again, you look at the options, what do we have? Like, you know, and
I think it'll be James Collins.
Oh, no.
Really? I think so, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait,
why is Shane Long in the squad?
Yeah, it is a strange one that he hasn't found himself back in it, particularly after the three lads pulling out. It definitely seems a very, very strange one. But
and to go back to what Alan said, James McCarthy, I would have had him, especially in these two away games, just sitting in front of the back four and have Hendricks and Connor just in front of him. Just let them off the leash a bit and just have James in front. But, you know, James, he has a bit more legs in there than Whelan as well.
Yeah, James, what's your thoughts on Saturday?
I'm just thinking, listening to the conversation here about Connolly and stuff like that, and it brings me back to 2010, Armenia away. Keith Fahey was in the same position at that stage. Everybody wanted Keith into the squad, and Trapattoni was in charge in Yerevan, which obviously neighbouring country to Georgia. So it's kind of the same kind of bit where people are like, oh, we want him in, we want him in, we want him in. And Trapattoni's like, no. But he comes off the bench and scores the winning goal. So we're in the same position here now where people are like, we need Connolly. We might get him.
God be with the days. If we need Paris, we need Paris, we need Paris.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think he starts. I'd be shocked if he starts, Connolly. Yeah, I really would.
I think, as you're saying, like, the Shane Long one's a bit, I don't know why you wouldn't at least bring him into the squad, especially as you've no proper striker there. He played again at the weekend. You've got players playing games.
McGoldrick's a big loss, isn't he? Because he's been great in the campaign so far. And when you look at, the other aspect of missing Duffy as well is the threat that he provides from set pieces, because we're not exactly carving out chance after chance in games. So Duffy provides such a threat as well. So that's another massive loss.
He's a big loss in both boxes, isn't he?
Yeah, he's massive, massive loss to everybody. He's like one of our top goal scorers.
Every time I see a Rover Lyons on him at the moment, I just keep thinking back to what would you give for a Rory Delap now?
Yeah.
Because it'd double the amount of goal scoring chances we'd have in a game.
I thought it was a positive time for Irish football. I'm going back to Rory Delap.
Keith, before we let you go, you mentioned the fact that you were there in Tbilisi under Trap a few years ago, and people talk about the atmosphere in Tbilisi and it can be very hostile. For a player playing in that kind of environment, how difficult is it, or is too much made of that?
Well, it is difficult because it's obviously not what you're used to. It's all a bit strange. The whistles sort of echo around the place and they get on your nerves. And the Georgians, they pinch you on the slide. They use every little trick in the book to get under your skin. They annoy you. And James McLean would be the, you know, he probably odds on to get sent off in this game with the way the Georgians
especially if he plays left full.
Exactly. Yeah. So what do I know?
100%.
You plays left full. To be in your mouth if he's rampaging angles in the box.
Keith, I hope you're not going into management.
Oh, geez.
You'll be the quickest sending off in Irish history if James plays left full out there.
All right, listen, Keith, many thanks for joining us on the line on the RT Soccer Podcast. Talk soon. Of course, full coverage of the game on Saturday Sport this coming weekend and also on RT2 television. James, we'll go for your hit of the week.
My hit of the week is obviously the fantastic news that both tomorrow night and then the under-21s games are complete sellouts in Tallaght Stadium. I think it just shows the buzz that's around football in Ireland at the minute. Women's football, men's football, the under-21s. I can't, like, even going back the years when the under-21s had good runs here and there, I've never seen sold-out stadiums, even when they were in Talkett and stuff like that, and Richmond playing games there, and the women as well when they were playing in Richmond Park many, many years ago. Never a sold-out stadium. That's only a 3,000, was a 3,000 capacity stadium at that stage. So to see Talla ahead of these games completely sold out, and to show how much of a buzz there is around this, I was listening to 2FM yesterday, and one of their competitions was for 4 tickets to the ladies' match, which I've never heard that. I've never heard of them kind of giveaways for football generally, unless it's a big, big playoff in the Aviva with the men's. But for the women's or the under-21s, never, ever, ever. And I'm sure the phone lines in here were hopping trying to get your hands on 4 of those tickets because it's completely sold out. It's going to be a great occasion, a great occasion for the new manager coming in. It should be a good match, and hopefully they come out with the right side of the result as well. So
the FAI Twitter feed last week actually tweeted out a video of a young girl getting told she was going to be mascot at
the
that
mascot,
game.
Yeah,
it was absolutely brilliant video. It was superb. Yeah,
the only thing I'd add to that, and it is, you're right, it's very positive and brilliant stories, and we're obviously covering the game tomorrow night, and for Stephen as well, there's a lot of talk and a lot of hype around the players and the team that Stephen has, which is brilliant. But the effort that's gone into hyping up these games and promoting these games, we have an FAI Cup final in 3 or 4 weeks with two of the best teams in the country. You'd like to think, and I've yet to see one word on social media or anywhere on the airwaves, you're on about competitions, James, billboards, posters, whatever the case may be. You'd like to think the same effort and promotion will go into the FAI Cup final. When
don't get me into that. I've already discussed that. Well, and the lack of publicity of the FAI Cup.
Now, right,
now we're 3 or 4 weeks out. We're 3 or 4 weeks out, so I will give them the chance. But I'd like to think all the effort I've seen, which is brilliant for those games coming up and they're sold out, is great. Because there's every opportunity of selling out the Aviva for those two teams, in my opinion, for what's... You have the narrative of Jack Byrne obviously be playing. You'll have the Dundalk going for the treble. They've been the best team for the last number of years. The rival now with Shamrock Rovers, you have a whole load of angles you could go at with this, and it should be sold out.
100%. Yeah, look, I mean, you talk about in my day to day job, you talk about creating an environment for success. I mean, if you're trying to create an environment to allow you to sell out an FAI Cup final, every single box has been ticked. Mm. Who the two teams are involved, as you say, the narratives around both teams heading in. I mean, if we can't get a massive, massive crowd at this one, we might throw our hat.
I'd be shocked if it's not a massive crowd, but I'll also be shocked, as you said, if the main sponsor of the Cup and the FAI get their acting gear, and actually, because they haven't done anything for the FAI Cup.
Well, you have to hope that they will. So we'll see in time.
Yeah. So. Give them time, Al.
I'm giving them time. Yeah, but
I think maybe
just
after this international window, perhaps. Well, hopefully so, because it needs a push.
But don't be complacent about it, thinking just because it's two teams are going to drag everybody. Get behind it.
Okay, Alan will be on duty on RTÉ2 television. The game is live. That's the women's game on Tuesday night. Ireland taking on Ukraine. Big game for Ireland, and of course, a first game in charge for the new coach, Vera Powell. And she's been speaking to our soccer correspondent, Tony O'Donoghue.
Key thing is that we get a positive result out of it. So that will be the starting point. We're still assessing how we're going to do it. Of course, we have our ideas. But the key games against Ukraine are key for the group. Germany, 8 times European champions, 2 times world champions. It's not realistic to think that you can knock them out of the first place. That doesn't mean we'll not try, but that is not realistic. They're all full professionals. They're all very, very experienced and at the very top of the game. We need to win from Ukraine in the home and away game. So we need at least a draw. And a win.
You were at the game against Montenegro, and I'm sure you've assessed it quite thoroughly since. What were your big takeaways from that? What did you learn?
Well, Montenegro will be was a completely different game that we will face now, because Ukraine is stronger. Although they have a very defensive block. That is their starting point, but they will move forward with that block in Montenegro. Really didn't do it. So it was really difficult to break that wall, and we must be happy that the team did that, and credit to them and the staff that we won that game, because you can equally end up with a situation that you play 0-0, because those two that went in, if they don't go in, you can lose points. Hopefully Montenegro will do that to Ukraine, by the way. But Ukraine is a completely different team, so we need a different balance. We need to make sure that if we attack and we make mistakes, that we cannot be countered, because their counter is really, really important and really dangerous. So we will work on that.
Now, the profile of the women's game has increased. Attendances have increased, but for this game in particular, you're hoping to set a record and get a full house at Tala.
If you've seen the World Cup and you're excited about that, you come to this game, because all the girls that are playing football, they need to really knock on the door of their parents or the adults that can come with us, of the coaches, the clubs. Let's go to that game, because the crowd can really make that little difference that we need. They're under pressure. When you're under pressure and your home crowd is really behind you, you can do things that you didn't know that you were, that you dared to do. That is the massive impact of a good crowd that is behind you. So I hope they come up in numbers. I hope the turnstiles will be packed, that we have to refuse people to come in because the stadium is full, and that next time we need to see how we can get them in.
Yeah, there you go. That's the new women's national team coach, Vera Poe, in conversation with Tony O'Donoghue. Big game on Tuesday night, and another big game in Irish football on Thursday night with the Irish under-21s under Stephen Kenny taking on Italy. And Shane, that should be a cracker. Ireland with that wonderful start, 3 wins out of 3. And I guess, can they keep it going? Italy, of course, traditionally a very strong footballing force.
Yeah, look, they're nearly the main attraction in Irish football at the moment, ahead of the senior team, aren't they, with the buzz around Stephen, and then you had Troy obviously at first, and then Connolly and the whole lot. Look, it's such an exciting, talented squad. It was interesting when I was chatting with Aaron on Saturday. I brought up, I said, you know, it's amazing that in an area where we've always lacked so much talent, that we've so much attacking talent in there at the moment. And Aaron was very, very quick to come back with, yeah, but I think that's kind of overshadowed how good the rest of this team is. He immediately talked about the centre-back pairing of Dar O'Shea and Conor Masterson.
Yeah.
He reckons they're absolutely brilliant. And then I was delighted. Then the next name he threw out, because I think he's been brilliant any time I've seen him, is Jason McLumphy.
Ah, brilliant. Oh, he's my favourite.
He's the engine on that man is just incredible. He seems to be able to do everything. So, look, they're playing super football. They're getting brilliant results, packed with attacking talent. I mean, it's no surprise whatsoever that it's a sellout, is it?
Yeah, I think the fact that the last day when I went up, because all the talk was Parrott, so I went up to watch Parrott mainly. But obviously Aaron was brilliant that night. The centre backs, as Shane said, but Malumbi
was brilliant.
Yeah, blew me away. I thought brilliant. He was absolutely, and not so much obviously his ability on the ball, all that. But what I loved about him, and I think I mentioned on the podcast after, just the personality he has on the pitch. Like, he was demanding of fellas, he was getting after fellas, and it's something that I just hate about the modern game. You never see anyone dig anyone out now. Everyone's a bit too soft for my liking, and I'm not saying you have to be kind of slaughtering fellas, but certainly even just communicating with them and pulling fellas in around you, or if they're underperforming, as I say, getting after them. And Malumbi was all that, and it didn't matter what player it was, he was getting after Parra, Connolly, whoever the case may be. And I know he's on loan at Millwall now, but I think out of all them, and this might be a silly thing to say with Connolly after what he did on Saturday, I think he could be the best of them all. Malumbi, I think he's fantastic.
What I can't remember, it was Stephen's first game 21's manager in Tala. Who were we playing that night?
Luxembourg.
And it was amazing. I was sitting just kind of up behind where the dugout was. I'd never seen it done before. Malumbi came off towards the very, very end, and Stephen Kenny put his arm around him as he was coming off, didn't about turn to the crowd and shouted at the crowd, "What about that for a performance, everybody?" And lifted his hands, and the whole crowd just, yay.
I spoke to Stephen about him, and Stephen has a really close relationship with him, and the words he used was that he's a really special lad as well, not just kind of a player. He's a lot of time for him, because he's been through tough times with injury as well. I think he probably would have broken on the scene. Something similar to what you were saying about Aaron with the injury, Shane. He suffered a bad injury as well, and he's come back for it. He's obviously out on loan at Millwall now, played against Leeds on Saturday as well. And I think it's only a matter of time before this lad breaks through. And you're looking, I suppose, in that senior position, Whelan coming near the end. You're looking at Hendrick and Horan. I think he has all the ability to go on and even be better than those two. Yeah.
Conor, a lot of excitement around the under-21s. And we mentioned Aaron Connolly and everybody just talking cock-a-hoop about Aaron Connolly being promoted to the senior side. But tricky one for Stephen Kenny, having perhaps been planning for the last 10 days or so with Aaron Connolly in mind against the Italians, and now he must make do without him.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of one of the drawbacks of Connolly progressing so quickly, is that he's obviously taken out of this very exciting team, which you'd like to keep together given how well they've done. And, you know, the Italians, to quote John Giles, I don't know much about them, Bill, but presumably they're pretty
decent. Younger viewers and listeners.
Presumably they're pretty decent, and obviously it'll be interesting to see how Ireland match up against them. The group is very competitive, obviously, with Ireland top of it, but you've also got Iceland there, who've won 2 out of 2, so and Ireland are playing them 3 days later away from home, so it's going to be an interesting 10 days or a few days for Kenny's.
I don't think he will have been planning with a minute. Stephen did an interview towards the tail end of last week, and he definitely said the phrase, "If we still have Connolly," 3 or 4 times in the interview. I think he absolutely expected to lose him. I don't think...
Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I really don't think he'll have been pinning all his hopes on having him and working, you know, every game plan kind of geared around him. I think he will have thought, almost have thought if I still have him, it's a bonus. I think having him nearly would have been plan B. I think he would have been okay. Planning without
the only positive, I suppose, out of that though, and I agree with Connor or Gilesy over there, is that
Giles is the greatest man in the history of Irish football, I'd like to clarify.
The only positive is that we are kind of top heavy in that area anyway, so you have the likes of Ida, you have Afolabi, so it might not be as much of a loss, the fact that obviously he is gone, but because we do have some serious attacking. And it's funny, as Shane said there a few minutes ago, when you think we were kind of, there was a dearth of talent in that area, and now we have these four or five, like, and I'm mad about Afolabi as well. I think he's a serious talent. Ida has kind of dropped off a little bit, so it'll be interesting to see how he goes, Stephen, Thursday night, because I think he started Afolabi in the game out in Sweden, and Mandreo played as well. So will Danny keep his place? Hopefully he does as well, because I heard he was terrific against Sweden.
Afolabi was great for the under-19s in their run.
Brilliant.
To the quarters, yeah.
And the best player on the pitch at that first 21s match that was Conor Ronan, who was essentially
Connor's
a 10.
Brilliant.
So you've got to try and work all, in my mind, Conor Ronan goes down as your 10 first, and then you slot in the rest of them around him. So I mean, that's probably another one of the attacking boards taken.
I do remember, Stephen, a couple of, after the last game at home, not the Armenian one, it might have been actually Luxembourg one, he was looking ahead towards this Italian game, and you're saying, I don't know much about the Italian team, but he had worked out how much the Italian team was worth. And it's something
the boy that
plays
for Roma, his name is Razzioli, or is it the lad, he's playing for Roma, the first team. There's a lot of Serie A, like, we're talking about the talent.
Well, the Everton,
I was going to say, Moise Keane was the only one that jumped out with me when I saw it.
There's a lad playing for Roma, first team.
200 million was the value of that starting 11.
But isn't it brilliant? Like, you know, that they'd be competitive against these boys. It's great.
Absolutely. Big crowd, sellout crowd at Talis Stadium on Thursday for the under-21s against Italy. My miss of the week, Seamus Coleman getting sent off at the weekend. Two yellow cards that may well have gone for the first one, but he eventually got red, so very disappointing. Alan, your hit of the week.
I've two this week, but I'm going to start with the Irish one, because this lad.
No, I tell you what. Go cross channel. Yeah.
Okay, I'll start cross channel because I was given out there a minute ago about the modern day game, and it does annoy me at times, Adrian. The money that's involved, sometimes I wonder, do fellas really care as much and all that kind of stuff, and I'm a little bit disillusioned with the whole thing at times. But yesterday brought it all back to me, and what it must have been like to be a little kid growing up, like all of us, and you have your dreams and you want to play here, there and everywhere. And to see young Longstaff play as brilliant as he did in the match, scored a winning goal for your hometown team in front of the main stand, the Gallowgate end, his brother beside him. Like, the story is just unbelievable. And for them to come off the pitch and he's getting his man of the match award and his brother hands it to him, and you just see the sheer joy and elation on their face. It was actually, I sat back and I thought to myself, this is the best moment I've seen in football in a long, long time. It was absolutely amazing, and they were brilliant in the match as well. The two lads, looks like he has a big future. I was obviously very aware of Sean, who I think is a good player, but this young lad looked very, very promising as well. But just the moment, and then it clipped up to the parents in the stand, and I just thought it was fantastic. I really did.
Even Graeme Souness on Sky Sports was taken in. He was getting quite emotional about it.
Yeah, because I'd say they're of a similar opinion, Adrian. You know, the money that's involved, and you look at lads now, and I don't want to be too hard on lads. It's not their fault that they're getting the money they're getting. But sometimes I just wonder, does it really mean all that much to them at times? Whereas, like, I probably grew up in a time when you go over there to England and you have your jobs to do and your YTS, and you had to earn everything, you know, you had to really earn whatever came your way. And I just think they get handed far too much now, and that might be a society thing as well, not just a football issue. But certainly you look at those two lads and what it meant to them, and even his bigger brother was talking about the night before how normally he's jumping around the house, but you could see the nerves, and he was quiet as a mouse in the corner, and he was dreaming of the big day and all this kind of stuff. And I just thought it was absolutely brilliant. I loved every minute of it.
Great. Your other hit?
And this lad I love as well.
He's an old man. Yeah. He's an old man by comparison.
He's
to
an out fella, yeah. He's an out fella. But I remember this fella when he was a young boy as well, and coming through with Shelburne. And then I was lucky enough to play with him for a couple of years. Or he was lucky enough to play with me for a couple of years, Adrian, out in Bray. Derek Pender. And watching him on Friday night, it was like watching an 18-year-old Derek Pender again. He was the heart and soul of the team. He's everything you want in a captain. I was lucky enough to play with probably the best captain I think, in the League of Ireland was Owen Heary. He was unbelievable, Owen, every week, every training session. You're talking about getting after fellas, driving fellas on. Owen was amazing. And Derek was very similar, is very similar to that. And obviously he was an understudy to Owen for a period of time as well. But you're looking at that Bohemians team, who I think have been fantastic, and all that Keith has done and what they've achieved on a shoestring budget, really. And you're looking at all the young lads that they're bringing through. But he's still the shining light, Derek Pender. And he was absolutely brilliant Friday night in a man of the match performance. Got a screamer of a goal as well. So yeah, he's my other hit of the week, and he's a great lad off the pitch as well. So
yeah, Derek Pender with the goal across Nost, dealt with by Tyg Ryan, the Cork City goalkeeper. 1-0 to both, thanks to Pender's goal. And afterwards he spoke to Tony O'Donoghue.
Yeah, it's a massive result, and especially I've just heard the results have gone our way as well, you know, for Europe. So look, it was scrappy. The goal was a fluke, obviously, but we needed it. We got a bit of luck.
Do you think you'll be given the goal, or is it an OG?
I don't know. Wardy told me it's an OG, but look, I will take it if it's mine.
So listen, this young Bowes side, last week you had the disappointment of the FA Cup semi-final. How difficult was it during the week to get players back up and to get them motivated for tonight?
Yeah, obviously it was a tough weekend after last week. You know, we didn't play well enough. We felt that, we knew it. But Monday, the training this week has been good, it's been tough. So we had a good week, and thankfully we got the result tonight.
Tonight is a huge result, as we say, in terms of European football. You'll want to be around for that next season, surely.
Oh yeah, well look, we'll see. I don't know, but we have to get there first.
Well, there you go. That's Derek Pender speaking to Tony O'Donoghue after that 1-0 win for Bowes on Friday night. Elsewhere, Dundalk won, Derry City nil. Daniel Kelly with the only goal of the game. Made 6 changes from the Cup semi-final. Dundalk, not a bother to them though. 31 domestic games now, unbeaten in all competitions. Pats beaten by Waterford by 2 goals to nil. Michael O'Connor with a penalty and a terrific header. And a finished goalless between Finn Harps and UCD at Finn Park, albeit Raf Crataro had a strong penalty shout. That result leaves UCD 6 points adrift at the foot of the table. In terms of the European spots, that was a huge win, James, for Bowes on Friday night.
Yeah, it was massive for them. They had to try and get themselves back into a position. They've got a couple of really big games coming up here. A win against Cork, and then you can probably see that Derry are going to lose Dundalk anyway, so they're going to go ahead of them. But now they have Dundalk this week, so will that go back around? But they need to be back in front before this Dundalk game. And then they've got Pats as well, so that's another big game. The fact that the top four now are going to get that position, I think for Pats, unfortunately, they lost to Waterford. You could probably say might have just done them in a little, especially they have to play Bowes and they have to play Derry as well now before the end of the season. So it's kind of out of their hands now a bit for that fourth spot. But the goal, or should I say, probably not a goal, Bohemians, I don't know, I'm not 100% sure it was over the line, to tell you the truth. We still can't really say.
Oh, it was over the line. It was over the line.
But yeah, I think that's given Bowes the impetus to go on, and they may well finish third now after that result.
St. Pat's were sneaking up on the rails in terms of European football, and they still might do it, Shane, but that defeat to Waterford, that's a real hammer blow, isn't it?
An absolute killer for them, because I think, what, we've 3 games left now. With 5 games left, I actually sketched out the games that the 3 sides had left. And to be honest, I had Pat's just missing out on it, and I had Pat's beaten Waterford, so I definitely think they're goose now. Yeah, like, they've got the 3 games left are against the other 2 sides that they're doing it with, plus Dundalk, and they have to go up to Derry. You know, it couldn't be tougher for them, and it's a real, you know, a real blow for Stevie, because he had them, you know, back doing well, tipping along nicely. And it would have been a fantastic achievement if he could have scraped in for that 4th one. It's so new to management. How much would he have loved the European adventure so early in his management career, you know?
And yet, Alan, you get the impression from Stephen, certainly from his interviews, that Europe wasn't foremost in his thoughts, that it was all about the bigger picture and seeing players and trying out players in different positions with a view to next season. He was looking at the bigger picture, so to speak.
Yeah, and I can understand in terms of obviously trying to assess the squad, but the fact that the European thing was so close, like going into the game Friday night, they were only 2 points behind. And based on, you look at Bohemians' form before the game Friday night, their last 10 league games, they'd only won 2 and they lost 4 and drew 4. So they've been limping along, Bohemians, ever since the break. And they've been literally, I worried for them, especially coming off the back of the cup defeat to Shamrock Rovers as well, because they almost went out on a whimper, which is so unlike Bohemians. I was at the game and Shamrock Rovers controlled the game without ever having to be brilliant, really. Bows were disappointing. So because of their league form and obviously that defeat as well, I was worried for them. And with Pats, I had watched Pats the previous weekend, Shamrock Rovers, and they were very, very good in the first half up in Talla. So I thought they had a real chance. Now, I don't think based on the season St. Pat's deserve Europe. I think Bohemians, despite them limping along the last few weeks, I think their form over the whole course of the season, they've been absolutely brilliant. And I think they deserve a European slot, and it would be a real shame for them to miss out. And again, going back to the resources and what they're working off, like, you can't underestimate the job that Keith Long has done there. And in terms of all the bigger picture stuff with the community and the connection and even the noise that they created the other night, there was a great atmosphere in Dalymount. I think it would be marvellous for them, and to see even if they can push on another little bit, because the one thing that was really disappointing for Keith last year, the squad was dismantled at the end of the season. I remember going in against the last day of the season to play Dundalk, and I left the ground, and it was a proper match, even though there was nothing riding on it. It was one of the best games I'd seen, and I left the ground thinking Bohemians have a serious chance of pushing on next year. And the following week they had lost Supple, they had lost JJ Lunny, all the players, and I'd say, nah, yeah, forget about it. But then he went out, and you could argue the recruitment this year has been better than what it was last year. So Keith has done an unbelievable job, and I think it'll be just rewards them getting European football.
I think for them, the bonus for them now is that the Derry Pats game is obviously off on Friday, which means that Derry and St. Pat's have to play their last three games in 6 days.
Yeah, that's tough.
So
yeah,
I think that's going to be a bonus for Bows, because Bows can just go about their normal way, Friday, finish out the league. Whereas for Pats and Derry, they've got to do those three big games in those,
yeah,
six days.
Where I do think Derry will probably have got lucky is Derry's last game is at home to Finn Harps. And yeah, I think the first leg of the playoff is 3 days later.
Yeah.
So you've got Derry, Finn Harps on the Friday, and then Finn Harps have got the first leg of their playoff on the Monday, knowing that the Friday game...
So Ollie won't even bring the team up to the match.
Exactly. I think
he'll be training that night.
A shadow side line out for Harps that night, potentially.
Well, it's either going to be a shadow side or they don't have to
and
play
Derry,
in that playoff.
Like, Derry have been great as well, Adrian. You know, like Decky, when again you go talk about the off season, the turnover of players there, and he brought in, I think it was 13 or 14
players.
And even the whole identity thing, I know, like, it means a lot. You go back to, I remember he done a tour of the city with a lot of the new players and just brought them round to see. And when you go up to the Brandywell now, it's almost like when you used to go up as a player. That vibe is back up there. It's a really difficult place to go. And so I think Declan has done a brilliant job.
I did my pro licence with Decky. If you were looking for a totem to stand for what Derry means, it's Decky Devine is a walking version of it.
The other result, by the way, from the weekend, Sligo Rovers 0, Shamrock Rovers 0. James and Alan, get your thinking caps on for Miss of the Week, but we'll go to Conor Neville. The First Division playoff took place at the weekend, the first leg that is, and it ended scoreless between Cabinteely and Longford Town. You were there, Conor. Why is it your Miss of the Week?
My Miss of the Week is me.
Childsy is right.
Because to my great shame, I was still in the Stradbrook Club bar when the most significant event of the game happened. Which was Dylan Grimes, that it was from across, and he got a head on it, I think, and it may have crossed the line, but I couldn't tell you because it was
because you were in the bar.
Well, I was watching through a pane of glass with a drink in my hand, which, you know, the great thing about Stradbrook, and I'd recommend it, going there, it's fantastic day out. It's not exactly the spiritual home of Irish football, no one could call it, but it's a great day out there. But you can be both a bar stooler and a League of Ireland fan. But that was the most significant event. The Longford Leader, which is obviously the most impartial source of news on Longford Town matches, said it may have gone over the line. I couldn't confirm that one way or the other. We did go outside eventually.
Did you?
After I finished the drink, obviously.
To leave.
Yeah, and then afterwards, you know, but Stradbrook's a fantastic place. They were doing about 600 there, I think they said. And
how many were in the bar?
Well, about 500, I think. No,
Can I state that as an employee of the company who owned the Longford Leader, how dare you doubt it?
There was no trace of sarcasm there. I'm an alumni of the Longford Leader. But Stradbrook, yeah, it's a fantastic place. And fuller there than I'd seen it earlier in the season, because it was obviously a significant game. Now, it was about half and half away and home supporters. I mean, it looked more Longford to me, but That was because I was among them. But
you were probably quite full yourself.
anyway, listen. A couple of drinks.
Maybe that's the miss of the week then.
Yeah, that's the miss of the week. Yeah.
Okay,
but it's a great place. Not exactly the spiritual home of Irish, but you're there afterwards, and you're looking at all these portraits of Irish rugby internationals on the wall. You know, with their initials. They're all J.F. Slattery. They're all written like cricket. The way cricket players used to be written.
Okay. Alan, do you have a miss of the week at all for us?
Not really. Well, going back to the game Friday night, it's probably more a funny story than miss of the week, but I was a little bit critical after the match of Neil Fenn. Not Neil Fenn himself, I'm friends with Fenny, but towards the end I felt it should have went 4-4-2. Adrian,
are you going to tell the story?
Go on.
And I says, he should have went 4-4-2. So I'm sitting in the house last night. Next thing, beep beep, the little text message, and I get a 4-4-F-2. And I just thought it was a good little moment because I am friends with Fenny, and it was sometimes the managers, I don't know, they can be a little bit sensitive at times, and you have a job to do as well. And I was just giving an honest opinion, and he agreed with me. He should have been 4-4-2.
As a new guest, am I allowed to miss of the week?
Go absolutely. Ahead.
Yeah.
Would you believe I was sitting in White Hart Lane last Tuesday night?
I heard this.
Oh my God.
Really?
But I think what's worth saying is your record every time you go to White Hart Lane.
It's absolutely shocking. I think I'm up to 7 games now and I still haven't seen Spurs win a game.
Really, yeah?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's a wonder I'm not barred out of the place yet now, to be honest with you.
Well, the Raiders were classed as the home team yesterday, weren't they? So that must be one of the first wins for the home team there.
Yeah.
Okay, before we wrap things up, James, can you invent a miss of the week for
us? Well, I suppose we kind of two misses there. The miss being, obviously, if there was only 600 people at the Cabin Teely game, considering, what was it Pat was saying, during the week, there's nearly 3,000 members or something.
2,000
members plus 1,000 family on the back of it. Out of 26 teams, like, that only that amount to turn up to see their team.
That was an estimate I saw on Twitter. Now I should clarify.
But do you know what I mean? As a buy-in to what's happening with the senior club, obviously that's a disappointment for Cabin Teely, that in such a big game, that's the crowd going in. And another miss of the week is Michael O'Connor. He has a great chance to get his hat-trick.
He got two. Come on, now, what a great header.
Oh, no, but his miss is up there with something that only probably you could do well. Ball is put across the box. All he has to tap it into the net. He gets his hat-trick, but instead of doing that, he just gets his feet wrong and he blasts it wide.
Oh, dear. All right. Okay. Matches this weekend outside of the internationals. Waterford against Sligo Rovers Tuesday night at the RSC, 7:45. Then on Friday night, it's Bowes Dundalk at Derrymount, Cork against UCD, Turner's Cross, and Shamrock Rovers against Finn Harps. The second leg of the promotion relegation playoff series, Longford Town against Cabin Teely at City Calling Stadium, 7:45 kick-off. And then on Saturday, a big game in the So Hotels Women's National League. Piemont United and Shells going toe-to-toe. Piemont with a significant lead at the top, but Shells really have to try and win that game and reel them in. And in the Cup semi-final, in the Women's So Hotel Women's Cup semi-finals, it's Wexford Youths against Galway. And one match on Sunday in the National League for Women, Limerick against Cork City at the Markets Field. So that's where we leave it, lads. Ireland, final word on Ireland this coming weekend. Gibraltar first. Next week we'll be discussing the Swiss game. We'll have Tbilisi out of the way. I sense a little bit of
I think we'll get 3 points in Tbilisi. I do think we actually will win out there.
Okay, well, we leave it at that. So final word to James O'Toole.
Denmark won't like coming in November with us having got 6 points in October. They won't like that.
Okay. All right. Conor Neville, Shane Keegan, Alan Colley, James O'Toole, thank you. Until the next time, bye bye.